we've got corporate consumer, John Lewis Waitrose within the team, and everyone just basically had to stop what they were doing. And we had to regroup and say, how are we going to figure this out? Whilst reacting to 100 media requests an hour.
Welcome to Communicating Purpose. I'm John Higginson, founder of purpose-led communications agency Higginson Strategy, and I believe that the best way to get a message across clearly is by talking about something you honestly and passionately believe in. By doing so, you bring people with you, your passion becomes theirs, and I call this the power of purpose. Today, I'm joined by Michelle Stageman, Senior Communications Manager of Sustainability and Purpose at John Lewis Partnership. Michelle is responsible for amplifying the sustainability and purpose-driven stories of both John Lewis and Waitrose, particularly the stories about the local communities its branches serve. In the midst of the 2020 pandemic, Michelle helped execute John Lewis's very famous Christmas ad campaign, Give a Little Love. Inspired by the community spirit shown by the public at the time, this campaign encouraged viewers to give back to those who were most affected. Michelle has almost two decades in the industry, having previously worked as head of PR at Marks & Spencer's and senior PR manager at Debenhams. Michelle, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Just tell us a bit more about your journey to where you got to today.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here. So my journey, it's been a bit of a winding journey, to be honest. So I did what everyone does, did a couple of years in agency straight out of uni, working on a lot of different clients, getting quite a broad mix of people and products that I was publicising. Then took the move to go in-house after a few years of that. Ended up at Debenhams, where I worked on lots of different categories. So obviously in the era of designers at Debenhams, working with a lot of different talent, a lot of different products, and sort of led me into my next role at M&S. So was at M&S for just over six years, where I worked on a variety of different campaigns across home, beauty, kidswear, some seasonal things. One of the kind of more purpose-led campaigns, I suppose, I worked on was Follow the Fairies, which is one of our Christmas ads, where we did a tease campaign, sort of delighting and surprising people and places and communities across the UK in the tease phase, and then revealing that it was M&S and our two fairies, Magic and Sparkle, at the reveal stage. So that was probably my first foray into the more purpose-led campaigns, but my sort of bread and butter 9-to-5 day job was around product and product PR. But I really enjoyed that challenge, and it brought me into that more kind of consumer or corpsumer space and telling those stories that are a little bit more community focused and the sorts of, you know, not guerrilla marketing, but crazy stunt PR. You know, the brief is always float a duck down the Thames and make it really purposeful. So that was kind of my first foray into purpose-led comms, I suppose. After, as I said, just over 6 years at M&S, I moved over to the John Lewis Partnership. So working predominantly on their homeware, first off, managing the team that were responsible for that. And then there was an opportunity for a brand new team via a restructure that we had a few years back, and it was to lead on sustainability and purpose communications, but across both John Lewis and Waitrose, and also at sort of that partnership level. And I just thought, that sounds really fun. I've been doing this product stuff for 15 years or more, and there was still an element of product. You know, we sell a lot of sustainable products, we sell a lot of sort of brands and products that have purpose at their heart. So jumped across to lead that team and to sort of start that from scratch. And here I am about 3.5 years in, and we've done lots of different projects. We've worked on all sorts of campaigns, be it farming, be it nature strategy launches, be it kind of products made out of sustainable materials or recycled materials, circular designed products, and everything in between, as well as our charity and sort of social impact stories. So I guess, I mean, that was really not very short at all, but that's how I have come to be here today.
Well, look, everyone knows the John Lewis Christmas ads, so I'm sure they'll really want to hear about that. Can you just shed a bit of light on the process between you deciding we're going to have a Christmas ad and us seeing it on TV? Tell us about that.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you some of what happens with that. To be quite honest, we as the comms team get involved once it's certain amount of time along, and we then get to kind of think about and discuss and activate how it's executed to, you know, press and to customers and on social, and working across all the different comms and marketing teams to bring that to life. So the actual ad itself is months and months in the work, and as you'd expect, very much under wraps on a very need to know basis for a long, long time. We usually start working on it, depending on what the subject matter is, around the summertime. So the two kind of purpose ads that I've worked on have been, as you mentioned, Give a Little Love, which was 2020, and then also the ad that was in 2022, where we had the care experienced foster story of the child with the skateboard going to his new foster family. And I actually was on maternity leave during that time, so I didn't work directly on it once it was actually launched, but in the run-up to, and my team did it. So they're the two ads that I've sort of had exposure to the most, as well as all the other ones. We tend to get the script and an idea of the story, as I said, in the summer. And then we get to thinking as to how we could bring that to life, how we could do that creatively, how we could do, you know, things that have not been done before, how we can reach our audiences in the best way. And in doing that, you know, with a purpose-led campaign, especially doing it with heart. So reaching people, sparking conversations, as well as, you know, getting people through the doors and into our stores, because ultimately, you know, we're a retailer. So it's a long process, and when it all, you know, in that burst of launch activity, it's really good fun, and a lot of work goes into it, a lot of work.
Great. So Michelle, can you just share some light on a moment that you've had a crisis comms experience and how you've dealt with that?
Sure. I mean, we have a lot of crisis, especially working for three relatively large retailers. But I suppose the biggest and the most recent was the pandemic when that hit. So we obviously were tracking what was going on, ready to do something. And we'd practiced, you know, can we all work remotely for a week or so before it happened? And then when it actually happened and we actually went into lockdown, we're a comms function, you know, we've got corporate, consumer, John Lewis, Waitrose within the team, and everyone just basically had to stop what they were doing. And we had to regroup and say, right, how are we going to figure this out? How are we going to get comms out to press around our stores that are staying open, our stores that are closing, the times they're doing that, the slots for vulnerable people, how are we going to get that out to press? How are we going to work on all of the logistical comms messages, I suppose, whilst reacting to 100 media requests an hour about what we're doing. Just trying to sort of field those inquiries and triage all of that was an absolute learning curve for me. I've never worked in any environment where there's been that much incoming whilst you're trying to get that much outgoing at the same time. Mm. We also, you know, once we moved past the initial, don't want to call it panic phase, but the onset of the lockdown, we then had some really quite lovely stories that we wanted to surface and to talk about. So things like, you know, the work we were doing with the Nightingale hospitals and the products that we were giving to those doctors and nurses and NHS staff that work there, and lots of other community focused stories that we really wanted to bring out and bring to life, because people just wanted some nice news or some slightly more feel good news than, you know, the 5 p.m. bulletin that everyone tuned in for daily. So I think in terms of my crisis comms experience, that's definitely the biggest and probably the most recent. And I think what I learned was, you know, you have to appreciate what everyone's got going on. So certain people were able to jump up and, you know, log on at 5, 6 a.m. Other people were able to continue working into the evening. And we just had to really organize ourselves and police ourselves as well. Because I think as comms people, you forget sometimes that you're not saving lives, and you do very much get in the detail, and before you know it, you've been doing something and 5 hours have gone by and you haven't stopped. So I think, you know, policing ourselves and each other to take a break, and to, you know, it was heavy going stuff, as well as all the calls that we were joining remotely as to what the business was actually doing day to day, and to make sure that we were a voice in those considerations, the decisions that were being made, you know, how that would impact. Was there any risk, any reputational risk in all of that? and just working together. It brought us really close as a team, even though we were all working from, you know, the corners of our kitchens or at the end of our beds at that point, because no one really was set up to work in the way that we do now. Mm. That's probably the biggest and I guess the most relevant example.
Yeah. And at the same time, you're a mother as well. And so you've also got the added element you would have had of children at home as well.
I did. I had a 19-month-old at home when that happened, which was probably my biggest challenge I've ever had. That was not fun. But, you know, I think she's quite resilient, nearly 6-year-old now. So maybe that's why.
Yeah, indeed. Well, we all have unfond memories of that time. But I'm sure we'll get over it at some stage, and I'm sure there'll be some great films and TV and books to come out about it. But at the moment, no one wants to think about that phase at all. So if you look at the arts, there's nothing about the pandemic in any way.
Yeah.
So just tell us, what kind of trends are you seeing at the moment in the PR industry, particularly in the area that you are, which is B2C communications?
Yeah. I think, and again, this is one of the reasons that I wanted to go for the opportunity a few years back when the new team sort of was created, definitely a rise in purposeful campaigns. I think go back 10 to 15 years when I was at the start of my career or sort of towards the early years, everyone was talking about CSR and how you do that. And now everyone's kind of moved into sustainability, and then there's purpose that's cropping up as a bit of a buzzword almost. So I think there's definitely a trend towards purpose-led or purposeful comms. I think that comes with the generational kind of moving on, and you know, the evolution of, you know, the people that are 18, 19 now, in 20 years' time, they're so into this. It's really important. It's up there on their agendas. They want to hear about what you're doing and why you're doing it. And if you're not doing it for the right reasons, then that, you know, they switch off. I've read lots of articles on that. I've listened to people discussing it on other podcasts and et cetera. So I definitely think there's a trend in purposeful comms. You've got some of the really big retail, you know, and company giants doing purpose-led campaigns. It's not just Dove, who, you know, they were one of the first, and that is always, you know, the one that sticks. But, you know, Mars do some incredible stuff. We obviously do quite a lot at the John Lewis Partnership, but there's some other retailers that are really doing some great stuff in this space as well. Like Unilever, a lot of their brands do some great things. I also think another trend that's probably a little bit more recent actually is personality being able to come out a bit more. So particularly on social, I think people are open to brands having a bit more personality and a little bit more fun than perhaps you'd have got away with a few years ago. We're still, you know, learning as we go with that, because when you've got such a well-loved brand that's a national treasure almost, you know, you have to be careful as to what you can and can't do when you're being, you know, a bit witty and a bit humorous. But I certainly think, you know, some of the supermarket social channels have some great fun and conversations. And I think that wit really comes through. And that's really lovely, being able to be, you know, in a comms role where you're able to react real time to some of those conversations that are happening that are based on what's going on in the news or something that's, you know, happened on social that people are reacting to. So that I think is definitely a trend. And I almost think that that's come a little bit from, you know, the big Netflix documentary with the Beckhams last year, where they've almost given us a little glimpse into their personality. And previously it was very, you know, straight faced. You don't really get, you know, past here. And I think, you know, by seeing them have a little bit of fun, and they've obviously had a few campaigns since then where they've brought that more to life, you know, Netflix and some of the campaigns they've done subsequently, I think they've almost paved the way. And then some of the brands that we work, you know, that we see have followed suit. So I definitely think personality and wit has got much more license now than it did 5 years ago.
Mm. Are there any mistakes you've made in your career that you've since learned from?
I think as a comms person, and again, with like a background or an initiation in agency, you very quickly make mistakes when you're pitching, especially when, you know, back in the day I was pitching on the phone for 2-3 hours a day. So you very quickly learn what you should and shouldn't say and how you have to know who you're talking to, what they're writing, what they're interested in before you even pick up that phone. And I'd say that kind of definitely sticks with me and stuck with me. I would never send an email to someone really now without knowing exactly what they do. And I think that, you know, you always see those PR accounts or journalist accounts where they've copy and pasted a PR round robin email that's gone out to all and sundry that is very so impersonal that it's laughable. So it becomes, you know, it almost goes viral, doesn't it? So that's definitely, you know, when I was a rookie PR exec, just, you know, selling in to all and sundry, I would definitely learn quickly that you have to tailor everything you do that goes to a journalist or to an influencer, as obviously things have moved on. Other sort of things I've learned from, I say it with events. Every time I do an event, I learn something else, whether that be how much you're ordering of something that you're going to have at the event or how different press are going to react to something that you're showing at an event. I'd say I've learned the hard way about events many a time. Even silly things like you get 7 glasses of champagne out of a bottle, you know, champagne maths, Prosecco maths, that's quite important from an early stage when you do PR. So just making sure that you're across all of that and, you know, being an events planner, comms person, obviously writing a lot. I think I've always, and actually probably more recently in my career, getting feedback as you kind of progress. I've learned so much from asking for feedback rather than sort of sweating out on a mistake that I think I've made. I would just go to the person that I think is in that with me or has observed it or I'm sort of accountable to and go and ask for some feedback and figure out how I could have done that a bit better, I'd say.
That's good advice, yeah. And I admire anyone who does events nonstop as part of their marketing, because we've just had our summer party fairly recently. Events is the one thing that something always goes wrong. There's so many different variables. It's such a stressful stressful part of marketing. But they are very good. People, when they actually go and meet in person, they are it is quite effective as a way of getting messages across. So I'd say carry on doing events, but trying to take the stress away, the only way you can do that is just to constantly be in learning mode and constantly accept that things will go wrong.
Yeah.
And good knowledge there, 125 milliliters in a champagne glass rather than 175 for a wine glass means you get 7 glasses there. So good knowledge. You can tell that Michelle and myself have both worked out how many glasses of champagne people are going to drink. Much like a wedding, half a bottle a person, and your friends will always drink much more than that. Yeah. Tell us about a big communications win that you've had over the years.
A big comms win. So I think one of my favourite campaigns I've worked on, and when I felt like, I always think that one of the best successes or the biggest wins comes from feeling like you've literally got no option and you're not sure where to go with a story or a campaign or a project that you've been given or you've worked on. And one of my favourite things I've worked on, when I was at M&S, we were challenged relatively late on as a comms team to activate one of the Christmas campaigns. I think I mentioned it earlier, Follow the Fairies, which was Magic and Sparkle. So it was our M&S Christmas ad, which again, at that point, obviously I've crossed into the other realm now. So I'm at JL. So we were always looking at how we could get to where JL were. And we had Magic and Sparkle, our Christmas fairies. And there was at the sort of 11th hour, a challenge that came from quite senior up to say, how do we activate this? How can we create an execution that's interesting, different, bold? How do we snatch those headlines, you know, without the just copying the JL formula? That wasn't the exact brief. I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, how do we get some more buzz for our ad? And we worked with a number of agencies, both comms agencies and our marketing agencies, our ad agency, to come up with these activation ideas. And we came up with this teaser campaign called, it was basically hashtag Follow the Fairies. This must have been about 10 years ago now. And we basically went into this kind of huge tease phase where we wanted to create buzz and excitement and almost this mystery around different locations of the UK. So we overnight made it snow in a school in Cornwall, which was so close to the sea that it had never snowed in that community. So we literally made it snow using some giant snow machine. I don't know. The agency sorted that out. And then we sort of had all the pictures done, sold in the picture story. None of it was brand specific. None of it mentioned M&S. It was just hashtag follow the fairies. And now everyone was asking, who are these fairies? Like, what are they doing? So that was the first thing. And it created a bit of, you know, mystery. Like, where's this come from? The kids absolutely loved it. We created some film. We were up all night editing and creating this film that went out. And we were doing social listening, making sure it went out all over. And then we did some mystery kind of graffiti sketches, art on the Thames path, that again were sort of talking, like hinting at what was coming. And there was loads of things we did. We did lots of sort of surprise and delight and gifting, but it was all, you know, follow the fairies. Can you nominate someone to receive someone who's deserving, a nurse or someone who's worked really long hours and are really up against it, got young kids, that kind of person, and giving these lovely parcels and these gifts to flowers, you know, hampers, that kind of thing. And this went on for a couple of weeks, gathering all this content. And this was before content was king, I think, really. It was almost on when it was tipping. So we had all this amazing content. And then what we did was, with the ad launch and the unveiling, which was during, I think, the X Factor, which is what we used to do back then. It was not social first. We unveiled the Follow the Fairies, or actually the M&S Fairies Magic and Sparkle. And I remember sitting there, we're all in a war room at the agency with the, you know, social agency, the media agency, the comms agency, the ad agency, all sitting there watching the ads like play out. And then we were reacting in real time on Twitter, which, sorry, I should have said this was a Twitter campaign, because I think this was before Instagram even had stories, or I don't even know if it existed, but it was very much a Twitter first campaign. And it was all around the hashtags and building momentum of this hashtag and what, you know, getting it trending and, you know, unveiling that it was actually M&S that was attached to this activity that had been going on in secret for the last few weeks. And then it was carrying it on through the Christmas sort of sustain phase. So in shops, you'd be able to surprise and delight. You'd be given the power as an employee to, you know, give someone their shopping for free, or give them a free bottle of wine or some flowers, or people that you recognise, community spirit. People could nominate using the hashtag for people that were deserving of these gifts. We were going out giving people Christmas dinners and so many different things, so many different strands of it. And at the end of it, we were all absolutely on our backs, exhausted, but it was the most fast-paced, reactive. It wasn't on the plan. It was literally dreamt up, and we came up with it within about a week, and getting it all signed off, getting the budget, getting everything agreed, and then down in Cornwall making it snow, you know, by Thursday lunchtime. It was one of those campaigns that, when it was all done and dusted, I think the fairies signed off on Christmas Eve, and obviously off they went for until whenever they came back next. But it was absolutely brilliant, because it was so collaborative, and it was probably one of the first big cross-agency campaigns that I've worked on as well, which, that's how we work now. But back then it was very, you know, comms do this, advertising do this, marketing do this, and it was quite separate, where it was really integrated, and it was so much fun, if not absolutely exhausting. It's a good job I didn't have kids then, let's just say that.
I think I need to lie down just hearing about that. But yeah, love those big old Twitter hashtag campaigns.
Afterwards, actually, because it was already...
there was that period for about 5 years where everything had to have the hashtag on it, and every time anyone got up and spoke at any event, they'd say and use the hashtag whatever it was, until finally people said, you know what, we don't need to actually try and get every single thing we do trending on Twitter. Tell us about a unusual skill or hobby that you have, something outside of work that might benefit work in some way. What do you do in your spare time? When I say spare time, do you have any spare time? Probably not with a six-year-old.
You've got going to the gym help. Well, I actually do gym classes. That helps massively to actually clear my brain. So a lot of the time, actually, I go on normally a Monday and a Wednesday. And a lot of the time I'll have a head full of stuff about what I've got to do this week. And then it's just nice to have an hour when I'm not thinking about it. And often I'll come out with a bit of a clearer mind. So, I definitely think that keeps me sane. I do a boxing class and I do a HIIT class.
Very good.
It's taking all my anger and frustration out on
the gym, on the bag,
rather, and my classes, rather than on my keyboard when I'm having a particularly busy day.
Yeah.
I don't think I've got anything that wacky or wild that I do outside of work. I mean, I've got a 2 and a 6-year-old, so just keeping them alive is enough itself. Negotiating with a 6-year-old is definitely helpful when dealing with...
Young children are extremely good at negotiations. Yeah, I've got a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old, and they get better and better at negotiating. What do you read for your own pleasure, or just for yourself, not just the cuttings that you get sent on John Lewis?
Yeah, so I mean, I try and read books rather than just news as well. So I don't get the chance that often. It tends to be, you know, snatched 10, 20 minutes on the train or of an evening, or if I'm away, maybe without my children usually. So I've just finished reading Lessons in Chemistry, which I absolutely loved that book. So now I'm going to, I intend to watch the series because I've been saving it. But sort of day to day, I read BBC News in the morning. I tend to look on there, get my news. And then I surf around on the websites on my phone, usually Monday to Friday. I love to read Simple Politics on Instagram. I think they're brilliant. And I love their kind of, again, their personality that comes through with what they're talking about. And then physical magazines and newspapers, because I am a bit old school. I still love the weekend papers. So I love getting the supplements on a Sunday. I switch them up. I love Sunday Times Style. I love to read You magazine still. I love, if I'm out and about grabbing a magazine, or I'm at an airport, I'm always grabbing all the magazines, but I still love to read Red cover to cover. I like to subscribe to things and read newsletters, you know, Vogue Business. I read Stylist online. And actually when I'm in the office, I read The Standard on the train home, which I really enjoy still.
Yeah. I know that Style magazine is very much aimed at the female market, but I love the what's up and what's down page on that. It's always very funny.
Barometer. That's been there for so barometer. Long. That was PR gold.
I love Barometer, yeah.
If you can get on that, then you've done your job well. Or an India Nights page. If you get a product on her page, sell out overnight.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's always, you know, it's things like Tories, crisps and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
Michelle Stageman, Senior Communications Manager at John Lewis Partnership. You've been speaking to me, John Higginson, on Communicating Purpose, produced this week by Catherine Kitchen. If you'd like to know more about how Higginson Strategy supports purpose-led organisations, please visit higginsonstrategy.com.